Okay, so our agenda is here. On the agenda today, we have only three issues. These are the only three issues that are not blocked by various things. Issue 113, defining exactly how IRI compassion is supposed to work. Issue 172, which is figuring out if each member in a list should contribute to term rank. And then JSONL, the API review by Robin Bergeon, which was pretty good, which we should probably go through. And then maybe some discussion about blocked issues. So this might be a short call. Is there anything else that we need to add to the agenda? Anything more we should discuss today?
There were some discussions about data sets versus graphs in the RDF telecon last week.
Okay, yeah, so maybe we should put that at the beginning of the agenda. You know, maybe we can, anyway. Okay, let's put that at the beginning of the agenda. Francois, you're up to scribe. Would you mind? You're muted. Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, so first up is the dataset discussion. Marcus, do you have a link to that? I don't have one offhand.
Yeah, just a second. Here it is.
Great, thanks. Issue 182, dataset versus graph. Okay, Marcus, would you mind kind of going through what was discussed on the call last week?
Well, basically, I gave a quick status update on JSONLD in last week's RDF working group's telecon, and we came to issue 105. I hear some.
Right.
I get quite some feedback.
Here, I got it.
Okay. Yeah, so we came across issue 105, the RDF working group issue 105, which is about data set syntaxes versus graph syntaxes. And I think it was Sandro who said that the working group doesn't really have an interest to push that issue. So if we need a resolution for that, we should be the ones to push that issue. And basically, the issue is that if you dereference an IRI and you get back a graph, that wouldn't be the same as if you would dereference the same IRI and get back a data set, even though if the data would be exactly the same, so the data would be just in the default graph. And one solution would be to kind of put a statement in the JSON-LD specification stating that within JSON-LD, we treat the data in the default graph the same way as a graph syntax would be interpreted. So that means that you could do connect between Turtle and JSON-LD, for example, and if you get back a JSON-LD document, you would just look at the default graph for the data.
Mm-hmm. That seems like a reasonable way to address the issue. Do you think that would cause any issue in the RDF working group? I guess what I'm saying is I thought that that's effectively what we were doing. And from what you're saying, it doesn't seem like the RDF working group would have an issue with that.
Well, the thing is, the RDF working group didn't define anything about graphs, so they don't have any semantics, which means that the data set doesn't have any semantics either, not even the default graph, so you don't assert anything if you return a data set, and that might be a problem, but yeah, we could fix it that way, and I think it was Richard who made the comment that probably this should be fixed in general, so that also trick or other syntaxes would work that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the conclusion was basically that we should kind of come up with a proposal and then push it to the RDF working group so that they are kind of, they have to resolve the issue because otherwise they would basically just close it or because there is no interest.
Okay. Greg, you're on the queue. You're muted. You're still muted?
I'm still muted. Sorry.
No.
Okay. Gosh. I can see why the default graph is appealing, but I wonder if maybe it is really the right choice. Perhaps it's more complicated than that. Let's say you have a data source that you can return via Turtle, and it describes, say, a book. And you return it by JSON-LD, and you would get an advantage of being able to not only describe the book, but metadata about that. It would be natural to put the metadata about the book in the default graph. And you could say that the graph, which is sort of equivalent, or which should be extracted when you treat the data set as a graph, would be that whose name is the same as the location. And what that might mean in JSON-LD is we would by default put data into a graph that's named based upon the location of the document. And if the graph keyword is used, then it would have to be more explicit. So that could have some change. But I can see why that might be a different alternative that perhaps makes more sense.
It seems like this might be, sorry, Marcus, it seems like this might be more of a best practice thing, right? I don't know if we'd want to say, put any musts or shoulds in the JSON-LD spec about what you just said, Greg. It seems to me that the general case is going to be what Marcus is proposing, or it seems to me that the thing that's going to be the easiest on web developers is what Marcus is proposing and not necessarily what you're proposing, even if it is, you know, quote-unquote more correct.
Yeah, I understand, but I just think it's not really a JSON-LD issue. It is a sort of a data set issue. And, you know, it might be that there's some different rules that certainly, if there's only a default graph, you would use a default graph. You could also say that if you're using a data set as a graph, then what you would do is flatten the data set into a graph, and then you would use all the triples. Mm-hmm. That's not wrong. There's nothing. I think in general, I'd rather have more data than less data.
Yeah, that was also discussed in the telecon, but so basically to leave the decision to the application, but that would mean that you couldn't generically do content negotiation between Turtle and JSON-LD because, well, it would be the application to decide whether the data is appropriate or whether it can't be used or how it will be used. And the other thing, like putting it into a name graph with the name of the document, that seems a bit odd to me because then it's not, I mean, you have a default graph, which is a name graph, and then an additional default graph without a name.
I missed, I'm sorry, I didn't quite get that last bit.
So you propose to put by default all the data in a name graph with whose name is the URI of the document, right?
It wouldn't go so far as to say it was a proposal. But,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So then you end up basically with two default graphs in JSON-LD, which would be a bit weird for me at least.
Well, it's not two default graphs. It's a named graph. The issue is not really the JSON-LD expression. It's what the behavior of an extractor is. I presume that if a service feels that a JSON-LD is appropriate to receive an in content negotiation for some endpoint that it'll return that. The question is, what does the receiver do with the data that's been returned? And you could say, if it might be easier to say if it returns n quads instead of n triples, sort of to remove the veneer.
Yeah, that's true. But if we don't specify that what the client or what the consumer should do, then it can't really. Well, it can use the data, but there is no standard way to interpret the data, and that's the problem.
I would say that if I am going to an endpoint for which I'm expecting a graph, and the service provider is presumably there's a contract that indicates if you poke this endpoint, you get a graph back. And if I get back a data set, if I get a JSON-LD or N-quads or trig or something like that, that I should be able to use that as a graph. And we just need to describe what the behavior should be on the client side, which probably has its most important application with Sparkle to deal with that data. So I think that... Yeah, I could see an argument for just flattening, applying the, basically stripping off the name graph component.
So creating the union graph.
Yeah.
That's if I'm concerned that we have some data loss if we do that.
Well, we don't have data loss if we do, well.
Meaning that the references to the name graph. Don't we have? I thought we do have kind of a. We lose data if we do that, right? Because we don't know where the triples, which graph the triples originated in.
Yeah, but the only other solution.
Data that,
the only other solution would be. To say that if what's returned is a data set, that you have to reify it. And no, thank you. That doesn't lose information, but it's just not useful.
Well, you could also say that you just use the default graph and all other data is ignored.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's to me, that seems like the most natural thing for a developer. It's just, if you're dealing with graphs, And you're mixing and matching two, the server is mixing and matching two syntaxes, one which supports data sets and one which does not. It seems like the least common denominator has to be used, which is the default graph. Those are the only two things that you have, similar between Turtle and JSON-LD.
Yeah, but if I went if I went to a PasteWarm site and I wanted to get back something which was signed by the seller or whatever, it would be natural to do that. And I don't know exactly how PasteSwarm is making use of it, but I would imagine that you assert the information in a named graph, and then you basically sign it in the default graph.
That is what we're going to do in the future. We can't do that now because RDFA does not support named graphs. So right now, PasteSwarm just has the default graph that it deals with. We don't use named graphs.
So if we are, if it seems to me that there is a trend towards supporting named graphs, I know.
Yeah.
With it not to be noted, I guess I think Yvonne at one point put forth a proposal for named graph support in RDFA.
Mm-hmm.
I could certainly see that. That happening in an RDFA 2.0, I think it would be natural to be able to do things that signing information is a useful use case.
Yeah,
well, and
I don't
if,
think anyone's arguing against that.
Well, that's sort of a if that's a use for named graphs, then it seems to me that the source of the main asserted data is more likely to be in a named graph than a default graph, unless we add some semantics to the default graph so that, let's say, there's triples there that describe it as such, and then a receiver would make use of that information in order to identify the appropriate graph. Now we're way beyond the purview of JSON-LD, but you know, we are sort of the first ones to hit this issue, so it deserves to be considered.
Right. I think I understand what you're saying now. You're basically saying that in the use case where there's a digital signature, the default graph is going to be the name graph. That's the entry point to the data, right? So your default graph is effectively going to be named.
Which is why I was suggesting if it's named based upon the document location, right? So, and you would just specify that with ID, you know, empty string.
Right.
And I've seen use cases of intrig that are quite similar.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's another way to go about this, and that's to say that, you know, that the server should not serve up, it should not do content negotiation for something that's intrinsically a data set. I mean, I think it's kind of strange that we're saying, oh, well, you know, you should be able to do name graphs and, you should be able to do graphs and data sets in Coneg for either or when you hit a resource. But I think fundamentally when you hit a resource, that thing's either a data set or it's a graph, right? And in JSON-LD, there's a way to interpret the data set as if it were just a graph. It doesn't change the fact that it's not a data set. It is a data set, but I think when it comes to actual implementers, it doesn't matter. They're just going to hit the thing, get turtle data back, or they're going to hit the resource and get JSON-LD data back, and the information is going to exist in the default graph. Any application that actually uses name graphs and uses data sets, if they try to Coneg for Turtle for that, it should just reject. It should say, you know, there's no representation in Turtle because Turtle doesn't support name graphs.
Yeah, it just seems to me it would be useful to get the information that wasn't signed.
Well, I don't know if that's... If you want that, you should be using a syntax that supports...
Well,
all of the data, right? I mean, you should return trig, you should return turtle. Or your application can make a decision of okay, I'm gonna create something in turtle that tries to represent the information in the data set, you know, in the most accurate way. It has more to do with what you do when somebody tries to content negotiate for a syntax that is going to be lossy.
We could support this in the RDF conversion algorithms. One of Robin's comments was that perhaps there should just be one call to the callback with all of the quads after turning JSON-LD into RDF. If that was the case, then we could certainly tell if basically all we had was the named graph, we could actually return quads where the name was the location, sort of by default, and only return the information that's, you know, otherwise return the information that's sort of specified through all the naming. And then we could invert that in the from RDF, which would make it useful. I'm wary about setting up a case where JSON-LD cannot be used where you would otherwise use other RDF formats, because I think we really want to try to push JSON-LD towards the mainstream of RDF and not sort of to the fringes where I think trig and quads is right now.
But
yeah,
that's
right,
exactly why we have to define that.
Right.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm not understanding is why can't we just say that, you know, if there's no other name graph in JSON-LD, the developer can just treat it, you know, just take the information from the default graph and just use that information. You know,
well, because
it is a data set, but there's only one graph in there, and developer can interpret that graph.
I think the problem with that is it's not so much with JSON-LD, because certainly, and it's not just developers, it's soft, it's like, how does Sparkle interpret it? It's how do I, you know, when I'm adding information into a data set and I retrieve a data set, what is the proper operation? And I don't think you can wait until you have finished reading the data set back to make that decision. I mean, for JSON-LD, I think document size is generally relatively limited because of the needs of JSON parsers. But, you know, and quads, triggered, are intended for data dumps where they might be, you know, gigabytes in size. And you can't wait to ingest the entire thing before deciding what to do with it. So if we were to change the RDF conversion thing so that data was returned using the location as the name, if there is only a default data set, then that would be consistent with someone specifying that same thing either in NQuads or in Trig. And I think is a reasonable interpretation that doesn't put a burden on developers. Certainly the vast majority of developers that are only using the default graph, it would behave as you would expect.
Mm-hmm. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I agree with that. Basically, I think that it would be good if we were able to formulate a suggestion to the RDF working group outlining those IDs. And one of the reasons for that, apart from what Greg said, I think, is that, so I'm getting a lot of static here. Am I garbled?
No. I think everyone's getting static. Someone's giving feedback through their headset or...
Right. Well, I think that, for one, if I understood correctly, the concept of data sets in RDF 1.1 does not allow you to have data sets within data sets. Is that right? You cannot nest graphs.
Correct. And you really can't in JSON-LD, even though syntactically they're nested in the data model.
Yeah.
Or not.
No. And for that should be some kind of signal. That, along with the fact that the IRI of a named graph has no semantics, it is left undefined, if I understood correctly, what relation it has to the resource that also has that IRI. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I mean, those two things is to me a clear indication that the grouping of triples within different graphs is entirely outside of the graph. I mean, it's just an instrument for us to be able to partition graphs, and as such, there should be no semantic distinction between a quoted default graph being returned and just the contents on that graph. If there is, and you could express that within RDF, you would be able to nest it, but you cannot and you should not. I think that sends a clear signal to me, at least, that there shouldn't really be a problem to at least deal with the default graph and the quoted explicit. I mean, having a default graph in a JSON-LD document returned or the contents of that as a pure turtle document should be semantically equivalent from a content negotiation point of view. Because there is no other way to make that distinction. There is no way within the graph to make the distinction, and I think that any protocol like Sparkle Update and the simple HTTP put operation in Sparkle 1.1, those should be clear about how to name the graph and stuff like that. It shouldn't be embedded within the content of the data, because once if that's allowed, then we have to make a semantic distinction about that. This will be like HTTP range 14 times 10.
Yeah.
Except for the very small subset of people that really care about it.
Well, yeah, but yeah, they should care about it outside of the logical perspective, if you will. It's an impure design by decision or by design. It's impure by design because I mean, otherwise you'd end up with like turtles all the way down, pun absolutely intended.
Okay, so
it's just it's an endless kind of. It's an endless can of worms, and you won't be able to handle that logically, in any way.
So I'm having a hard time differentiating the nuances between what Greg is asking us to do and what you're asking us to do, Nicholas. And I guess Marcus as well. I don't know if we can. Greg, could you formulate what you're formulate something into a proposal? The same with you, Marcus, and the same with you, Nicholas. Just to get some language on the screen that kind of.
Well, I did type some things in. I did type in to the basically what I was outlining. If you're expecting a graph, a consumer should extract the graph of the name equivalent to the location. Now, from quads. So, if I am some consumer and I retrieve an endpoint, and that endpoint produces quads, and I'm expecting a graph, then I extract the quads that have a name equivalent to the location from which I retrieved it. If I retrieve triples, clearly I just use the triples.
How does that translate to JSON-LD? Does that mean that if you were content negotiating between Turtle and JSON-LD, the Turtle document would, of course, just have triples in it, and the JSON-LD document would have what? It would have just a default graph, no graph ID?
No. What we would do is when we are transforming JSON-LD into RDF, we collect the quads that are produced. When having done that, we are left only with a named graph or with a default graph, then we produce quads that use the basically empty relative IRI as the name.
Okay, but how does that affect the actual JSON-LD document that's returned? I guess the main thing
it doesn't
that I'm
it doesn't affect the JSON-LD document. The JSON-LD document, we don't have to change it at all.
Okay.
The RDF that results from it and the behavior of RDF when it's retrieved. So if we were turning quads into JSON-LD, I think certainly if we get quads where there's no name, then it's clear what the intent is. If we get quads where there is only one graph, named graph, and the named graph is expressed as an empty relative IRI, then it's also is the default graph. So in that sense, we would sort of lose some information. But that would allow you to feed the triples, the quads that came out of JSON-LD back in and get the same input document.
Okay, the main thing I'm concerned about is if any of these proposals disallow us from using like a top-level JSON object where you have, for example, you know, foo and bar at the top level with the context.
I was trying to avoid that scenario, and I think
okay,
that doesn't.
Good. Okay, then I misunderstood what you were saying, because I thought you were saying that we would have to put that foobar inside an at graph container and then add an at ID for the top level. And that's not what you're saying.
No, it does not have any implications on JSON-LD syntax. It does mean that you would not be able to take quads that use a name, which is an empty IRI, and turn it back into a JSON-LD document that had a name, which is the empty IRI.
Is there a use case that requires that?
No, there's not. It's just that's the only example I can think of where we've actually sort of lost potentially some expressive data.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's particularly important use case at all.
No, I was wondering if the empty when you were saying it's a you know empty name, if that would be resolved relative to the IRI of the representation for the resource, meaning it would expand out into the IRI for the resource.
Well, I'm sure there's some hand-waving going on because you would have to know what the document location is. So it's best expressed syntactically as an empty relative IRI. But you know, as an endpoint, certainly if I know the endpoint to which, as a service, I know the endpoint to which a document is posted, and I can sort of infer the information from that. But we're getting into areas that I think start to get pretty patchy.
Right. So I guess I'm unclear about the difference between what Marcus is proposing and what you're proposing. Because it seems like, Marcus, your proposal is at the JSON-LD syntax level, and it would be no different, I don't think, from what Greg is proposing. So Greg is saying this is how we interpret the information that JSON-LD gives us. And you're saying, well, the JSON-LD document that we get back, we just use whatever's in the default graph.
Yeah,
it seems like they're kind of two parallel. Neither one of your proposals require us to change the JSON-LD syntax at all, or the document that's given back. It's just how the client interprets it, right?
Well, if I understood Greg correctly, what he's proposing is if there is data in a JSON-LD document and it has no graph associated to it, it would be put into a named graph whose name is the same as the document where the data is contained. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So basically there would be no default graph as it is defined now. So default graph has no name.
When turning into RDF, that's correct. You would not, if you had a document that not make any assertions about graph names, then it would not return quads in the default with a default graph. It would return quads that are named based upon the document location. The reason for doing that is to allow a use case where we were using the default graph for expressing provenance information, which I think is a desirable use case. And this is a way of not putting a burden on authors that don't want to provide provenance and therefore don't want to explicitly name things.
Yeah. The problem I see with that is that you prevent another use case by doing so automatically, so you can't put anything into the real default graph anymore. And
you can. Sure, you can put stuff into the real default graph by asserting some named graph. In fact, in JSON-LD, we can assert an empty named graph. Right, so we can have a object with an ID and at graph and the value of that graph is an empty object. So that does not that basically specifies that there is a graph name, but it doesn't actually put any triples in it.
Well, I'm not sure I understood that correctly. So you would say that you would just put the data into a named graph with where the name is the document ri if there is no other named graph in the document?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't really like that because then suddenly your data changes if you at a later point in time decide to add a named graph. So before you always had your data in a named graph, and as soon as you add a named graph, all your other data would drop out and move to the real default graph.
Yeah, when looked at in the point of view of... We looked at the endpoint, the point of view of mutability.
Is what exactly if the default graph actually has a name or not?
I think the default graph
has any provenance information or not?
I think the problem for me here is that the notion of graphs is to be primarily in the domain of the keeper of the information, and I have a general problem with the publishing of named graphs. I mean, in Greg's example, if you have an IRI for the document and you publish it, say, returning a data set saying here's the information in the named graph with that IRI, and then you assert things about that named graph in the default graph, but from the consumer's perspective, you would want to put provenance information in your default graph about that document which asserts things in the named graph named by that document. And so there is a clashing of two worlds inherent in that. There's a conflict between the notion of which default graph and what is the source of the triples in the two versions or the default graph of the publisher and the default graph of the consumer or receiver.
Well, one way to resolve this might be because we could just say that provenance information should not be expressed in the default graph. But yet you can have a named graph that provides provenance information for the default graph. That would allow us to simply use the default graph as we are now and as Marcus's proposal uses, but still allow a use case where we could provide provenance information as well.
Yeah.
I think I'd prefer that. I'm trying to think through the Paceworm use case to see how that would pan out there.
And we have some examples I think we would have to rewrite where we talk about using the default graph to sign information on a named graph. Not that it can't be done, but probably we would want to rephrase it so it was a named graph that was... Although there's a chicken and egg problem there because in JSON-LT, a named graph has to be included basically within the default graph.
Yeah.
Well,
but
okay, we're 45 minutes into the call on this.
It's a tough issue.
It is a very tough issue. Maybe we should push this off. We've had a decent bit of discussion on this. Maybe we should push it off onto the issue tracker and discuss it more there.
I think it would be best
to kick that discussion off would just be for Nicholas, Greg, and Marcus to put down three proposals of how this information would be interpreted, and we can kind of go from there. Nicholas,
yeah,
you're saying?
I, Yeah, just a reflection on the suggestion that Greg outlined, where you have a named graph with a provenance. It is very similar to how I thought of atom entries as a kind of named graphs, which packages information about the resource.
Oh, you dropped out, Nicholas, at least for me. I didn't hear what you said.
All right. Do you hear me now?
Yes.
I have minted a special IRI for atom entries in my system, which deliver information about different resources. This is sort of similar to a distinct named graph with provenance information. It's very similar to how Greg suggested an alternate version
okay,
of
well,
his proposal.
Okay, well,
so
there seems like there might be agreement there.
There may be something substantially useful there.
Okay, well,
yeah.
let's discuss more on the issue tracker and go through a couple of iterations and then bring the issue back to the telethon next week. Hopefully, we'll be able to make some progress over the issue tracker or through the issue tracker. Anything else on this issue before we go on?
Yeah, I just want to. It seems that Sandra Hawk said here something relevant to our different proposals, which looks like Marcus' proposal. He said that you can treat this as a graph source, i.e. the ASNLD document if you want to, and then you get the default graph. Should just want to note that Sandra Hawk also seemed to think that was a viable solution.
Yeah, but we need to think through the provenance issues.
Yeah.
Yep, okay. All right, then to the issue tracker. Next topic is issue 113, defining exactly how IRI compaction is supposed to work. We have... let me get the link to that. We have two proposals that have been commented on with concern from Marcus that we might be kind of missing the point with the proposals. So the initial, this is the whole term ranking discussion, right? It's Marcus had proposed a new algorithm for term ranking. Both Greg Kellogg and Dave Longley had concerns that it was just different, not necessarily better. Marcus felt it was more clear, and so after a bit of back and forth, the two proposals put forward were either to clarify parts. I'll actually just put the two proposals in here. So these were the two proposals put forward. It seems like proposal one has the most amount of support, which is basically to keep the current algorithm but clarify bits that Marcus is concerned about. But since the majority of the thing that Marcus is concerned about is the term ranking algorithm itself, which is the meat of the algorithm, the IRI compaction algorithm, I guess, Marcus, you feel that we're kind of missing the point on it, and meaning that there's no amount of clarification that we could make to the current algorithm that would be acceptable to you. Is that a fair summary of your position?
Well, basically, to me, it's not clear at all what that proposal is about. I mean, what parts are we discussing? What parts are out of scope for that discussion? I mean, yeah. So it's a bit too abstract in my...
Okay, sure. So I think the main thing that proposal was trying to figure out was what major algorithm we're going to be working with. And I think that proposal clarifies that the major algorithm that we're working with is the one that's currently in the spec. So if we decide that that's the one that we're working with, then you need to be specific about what parts of that algorithm are not clear. And then once you do that, we will fix those parts of the algorithm. Greg, you're on the queue.
This also intersects with potential changes we'll need to make to deal with property generators, property generators and or language maps. And it's possible that when implementing property generators in language maps that the term rank algorithm is going to require some work. If it requires work, then we should probably do the best thing we can. I certainly don't feel we need to stick to the basic mechanism that was used. It's just that I didn't see a compelling reason to change what we had if it's working. But if we're going to have to work on it anyway, then I think it's sort of fair game.
Understanding that if we work on it heavily, it could modify some of the term ranking stuff and modify a number of the tests. Right.
Well, yeah, I think that the tests, I think the issue came across about one test in particular that seemed to be intended to find weaknesses in the algorithm and show that Marcus's algorithm treated that better, which is all fair and good, but was not actually discussing, it wasn't suitable, in my opinion, as a test for the existing algorithm, at least as a normative test. I think if we're going to change the algorithm, then I think, yes, that implies that some test cases might change to correspond to the algorithm. This is why I think some time ago I said that I think trying to specify this stuff in so much detail is problematic when you got things that, in particular, where you're sort of abusing term ranking in the case of list averaging. At one point, I think I suggested that, well, when it comes to lists, perhaps all the components of the list must match a given term rather than the preponderance of the values, which would sort of remove any ambiguity and make the choice of the algorithm much less sensitive.
Yeah, but that's just one of the things we never really discussed. So there is an algorithm now which does neither of that. That neither looks at the majority nor does it look at all the elements, or neither does it look just at the first element. It does something in between. And that's what I have some problems with, because it's very difficult to explain and to understand what's really going on.
So I think maybe the best way to solve this would be for someone to actually sit down and rewrite the algorithm, and whatever they rewrite it as, as long as it solves the compaction issue, meaning it addresses all of the things that we've been discussing over the past couple of months. You know, I don't really care what that algorithm ends up looking like. It just needs to work, and it needs to be fairly simple. So I think that rather than us discussing this over and over and over again, someone just needs to volunteer, sit down, and rewrite the algorithm. And then the other implementers need to implement it, you know. So it sounds like we need to do that anyway. And so personally, I don't care if we use, you know, what's been in the spec and modify that, or completely rewrite it to use Marcus's algorithm. Solution in there.
I don't care if it's my algorithm, but I care how the algorithm works, and I do care that I understand how the algorithm works or what the outcome of the algorithm should be. And with the current algorithm, I have a hard time to explain that to someone or even to figure it out myself. And that's why I would like to discuss at least what the desired output is.
Well, I think it's clear what the desired output is for everything but lists. And I think the current algorithm actually expresses that. I mean, modulo the interaction of property generators and language maps. It's really when you get to what is the best term to use for a list which is composed of mixed elements. That's what gets complicated. And I can certainly see that I might want a list of the same value in different languages. And I should be able to select a term to express that list. But choosing a term that maybe has a language associated with it when you have a list that with multiple languages is a little nonsensical, although it certainly expresses a corner case in an algorithm.
I'd like to... Sorry, Nicholas, you're on the queue.
My spontaneous reaction to that is that the only applicable term for a list with mixed content must be the term which has no specific definition for neither type nor language. Because that's the only applicable case. And because you can't split the list either. Mm-hmm. So that to me sounds like the simplest and the only usable solution. I'm trying to think of if there would be some case where that would make somebody's data more verbose than needed, but I don't really think so. If it's a mixed list, it's really a very, you should, must treat that data very with lots of knowledge in line in your code, so to speak. You can't really compact that.
You're basically picking the least common denominator term. It's the term that's the broadest that matches the data in the list.
I mean, with sets, it's a different...
With the way we do everything else, right?
Yeah, I think...
So that would basically... Go ahead.
Sorry, are you there?
Well, so I was just going to say that would alter the algorithm as it is now to basically reject a term when comparing against a list when any component was found that did not match the type and language properties of that term.
Yes. I think
but it would
so. Because
the algorithm, right?
I hope so. haven't really been able to grasp it.
I would much rather do that if it simplifies the algorithm. I don't think that we need, I think we can only do so much. If people are going to create these massive mixed lists, then tough. You know, it's just we're not willing to complicate the algorithm so much to try and, you know, tease out every single corner case.
No, I can't really see the case for trying to cast such things. I mean, we have to clearly differentiate between the crucial difference between the list and the set. Since the set is just a bag of unordered stuff, you can easily divide values between two different terms which have two different type coercions. That doesn't distort anything, but the list is a kind of type. Mm-hmm. Although we use container because it's even in all the RDF level, a different type. The only case I've seen of mixed lists, well, I've actually used them when I used the schema-rama vocabulary to report errors using lists which represent certain items which are problematic, and in those cases I would never try to coerce any of those values inside because I have to pick at the specific details of those. If there is an IRI, I need to know that in the usage.
Mm-hmm. So going back, I think we are in agreement on how this should work. So that the next step is someone sitting down and implementing or rewriting the algorithm. And I'd much rather we just do this in, you know, pure meritocracy fashion. Whoever gets to it first and implements it, you know, if what they write in the spec is understandable by the other implementers, that's what we're going to keep. Because I think we're agreed on what the output should be. So, and I think we're agreed in general what we're trying to do. We're trying to simplify that algorithm a little bit. So I'd be fine with Marcus rewriting the algorithm using his approach, as long as he takes, you know, all the other decisions we've made on compaction stuff into account. I'd be fine with Greg sitting down and doing the same as well.
Sadly, that's not going to happen, Rao. But I think if we are going to rewrite the algorithm, we need to do the thought experience required for the other features that we've been adding, just at least to rule out that they have an impact on that.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by thought experiment?
Well, I mean, I think if we're going to come up with an algorithm, then it shouldn't require a further rewrite when we eventually get to.
This should be the final version. It should include property generators. It should include, you know, the simplified, you know, least common denominator term selection for lists. It should include all of those things.
Could we do a proposal on that list, how lists are compacted, so that we have it?
Yes.
Yeah,
so proposal when compacting, when compacting lists, a term that most, the term that most broadly matches all of the elements in the array.
Yeah, we need to take into consideration the default language too. That's effectively part of the term definition.
It's a term that most broadly matches all of the elements, taking into account the default language. Bit concerned about most broadly matches. I don't know if that's too vague.
Maybe it would be better to say the term that, the most specific term that matches all of the elements.
Yeah.
Okay, good. The most specific term that matches all of the elements in the array.
Yeah, in the list.
So that's good. And then I think we have resolutions for property generators and round tripping those. Trying to remember language maps. Pretty sure we have that.
Yeah, please so.
In annotations.
Right.
Okay, so I think that covers all the bases. So whoever rewrites this algorithm has to take all of those things into account, write the algorithm, and make sure that that's understandable by the rest of the people in the group. And we should probably not bring this back to the group for discussion unless it's absolutely necessary. So just patch request, you know, the algorithm, or just, you know, if Marcus starts on it, you know, and Greg finds an issue with it, Greg just patched the algorithm, or Dave Longley just patched the algorithm and just keep going until we're done with it. Does that seem like a reasonable way to make progress on this issue?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Do we need to do anything else with this issue to kind of go forward? I don't think we can resolve it, but I think we're basically waiting on someone to implement it. Okay. And I think, yeah, so that was issue 172, is that right? Next topic is issue 200, Jason LD API review by Robin Bergeron.
I think it was issue 133, which we just discussed, but it also...
Oh, I'm sorry.
113.
Yeah, you're right.
113, yes.
Yeah. But it also resolved issue 172, right?
I think so.
Let's just bring this up really quickly because I think we can resolve this one. Issue 172. So this is a question on whether each member in a list should contribute to the term rank. I believe what we just discussed is that the answer to this question is yes, kind of. It's not quite straightforward. So the answer is that every item in a list is considered when calculating term rank, right? And the most specific term that matches all the elements in the list, taking into account the default language, is selected. So does anybody disagree that issue 172 has been resolved? Okay, no disagreement. We'll move on then. Issue 200 is a review by Robin Bergeron. Yvonne felt that it would be good to get a review of the JSON-LD API by somebody that is very much steeped in WebIDL and JavaScript APIs and all that kind of stuff. So we got a review from him, which is great because he's a really busy guy, and he has a lot of good feedback on it. And I see that Marcus has already responded. Do we want to go down every single item in this list and get a general feeling for what the group thinks would be the best way to address each item?
Well, I certainly think we should talk about the use of IRI versus URL.
Okay, so that is up near the top, isn't it? Yeah, it's the first item. So Robin is saying you guys are probably the last people on Earth still talking about IRIs, insinuating that we should be using a URL everywhere.
Wow, what a different worldview.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the HTML5 worldview. And in fact, we've gotten a lot of, we got flat for using the word IRI in the web payments group. So basically, all but the most pedantic people use URL, even though IRI is more correct.
The problem I have with the use of URL is that, at least the last I checked, HTML5 URLs actually modify what was specified. And we put a provision in RDFA warning about the use of href and source when expressing an object, say, because it could result in something different than if you use resource. And that's my concern about just using URL.
And I think the plan is to update the URL specification to effectively absorb the IRI spec, but I'm not positive about that. I think the I think there's some kind of movement in the IETF to redo the URL specification to make it internationalized. So we could move away from IRR. I don't think people are going to care in the end. I mean, I don't think it's going to cause so much confusion that people aren't going to know what's going
on. Well, except all of the other RDF specs are being updated to use IRI.
Okay.
And so I think we probably should be consistent.
Yeah. Yeah. Does anyone feel very strongly about using URL over IRI?
So, also, I'm on the queue.
I'm sorry.
One thing that I think Robin suggests actually that we use URL starting with an assertion that says that we're using URL to mean IRI, which in effect just means that we're aliasing IRI into URL. So the normative definition would remain IRI, except that throughout the spec it would be spelled URL. That's my understanding as well.
Are you saying the spec currently says that? I didn't think it did.
No, I don't think the spec currently says that.
Okay.
But I think Robin's suggestion is that we actually start by a short sentence saying that people will care, saying that URL is used instead of the most proper IRI, but we really mean IRI, and we use URL just not to scare developers away. But so that would avoid having to link to a definition of URL that you don't like.
I just think we can't ignore the difference in HTML5 URL with regards to sort of browser conformance, you know, modifications. I'll see if I can find that.
But then in that way, we should just stick to IRI as a result. I think that's a real issue. I'm pretty sure that the comment Robin actually raises is more that it's that this, you know, what an IRI is, than that we should use the definition that as it appears in HTML5 with the changes it brings.
You're suggesting that we should use the definition that's in HTML5 for URL?
No, I'm suggesting actually the contrary, that we stick to IRI because that's more correct in your view, right? Isn't that what I understood? So that I'm suggesting that we stick to IRI. The use of URL is just to, I guess, it would just be a syntactic sugar to please developers. I'm not sure that's necessary, actually.
Yeah,
but I don't think Robin is actually asking that we use URL as defined in HTML5.
Yeah. The other option is we just push back and say, hey, look, there are actual differences between the two. And
absolutely.
All of the other semantic web specs are standardizing on IRI. And we don't think that it's going to cause a great amount of confusion with people reading the document.
Yeah, I think maybe there's pushback on, say, Turtle. So if step 6 in the resolution algorithm that I just pushed up there says that you basically compact percent encoded segments, which you specifically do not do in Turtle. So I think that's the problem with URL. I would be pleased if URI was updated to mean IRI, because I think that developers do have a sense that URLs and URIs are similar, but not entirely identical. But URI is much more commonly understood term than IRI. So we could use URI in the spec and just say that for the purpose of the spec, URI is conformed to the IRI specification.
Wasn't that in RDF 1.0 what they provisionally created URI ref or URI reference while waiting for IRI to be defined? I also agree that it would have been better to update that the IRI RFC was an update to the URI definition. But I don't know if using URI here to mean that is the best. I would like for it to be...
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
The problem is that technically URI and IRI are not the same thing. In HTTP, for example,
yeah,
you can't use an IRI, but just a URI. So I think at the moment we should just keep IRI until someone pushes it, and then, I mean, it's just a simple search and replace if we really want to change it. But
yeah, I agree. I don't feel like we. I don't think anyone's really pushing to change this. So let's just move on. We can ask him what he would suggest. Marcus has already asked him what he would suggest to you. So let's see how he responds.
Yeah.
Second bullet point. We should add a highlight class to the code examples to do some syntax highlighting. That's pretty clear. Robin thinks that the definition we use for JSON object is confusing, and we should just refer to RFC 4627. I think that's fine if we refer to RFC 4627 for all of the JSON keywords, right?
Yeah, I checked. It's a bit confusing in the API spec. It's much clearer in the syntax spec.
Okay, so we'll make that change, RFC 4627 for everything. We should be putting parentheses around our union types, which is rights. We didn't know that. We should do that. We should do that. No interface object is usually a red flag. In the case of a JSON LD processor, he's not sure what to advise because it's unclear how this is expected to be exposed. The examples just reference JSON LD object but don't say where it's coming from. He wants us to add constructor. That way you can do new JSON LD processor and do feature detection. The reason no interface, I put no interface object in there is because while we were working on the RDFA API, all of the browser vendors really pushed back and said do not create new types, new top level types with constructor. You should put no interface object on everything. And the assumption is that the object just exists. It exists when you have a script tag and you import it, meaning that there shouldn't be a constructor associated with it at all. So I'm going to push back on that and ask him why he thinks that we should have a constructor. Because you can do feature detection without having a constructor, just by doing JSON. JSON LD dot has feature.
The problem is that then you just have the methods. You have no JSON LD processor dot.
Sure you do. That's how the JSON processor works. JSON dot stringify, JSON dot,
Yeah, but that's not how it's supposed to work with that annotation in WebIDLE. If you have that, you would have just the method.
What's the alternative to constructor then that makes that happen? How does the JSON parser WebIDL specify? Because that's probably what we want to follow if it even has a specification.
Well, you could have a constructor but have a private constructor, for example. But nevertheless, in WebIDL, you would have that constructor annotation.
Okay. I think let's ask. Well, we might want to ask in the WebWG channel to see what they have to say, because they would certainly know. I'm not convinced that constructor is the right way to go, because that's what I did previously, and we got a huge amount of pushback on it. Okay, let's ask about that in the WebWG channel. So in the pros, you shouldn't say it's okay to not use the asynchronous approach. If you really want a synchronous interface, then you should define it properly in its own section. But really, an asynchronous interface is probably the way to go. So what we might want to do here is, since the WebIDL is really being specified for JavaScript, maybe we would just say that, look, this is an asynchronous API. If you're going to implement an asynchronous API in JavaScript, you should use this. But you can implement the API in any other language as long as the algorithms are followed. So if you want to be conformant with the algorithms, you don't have to follow the asynchronous interface. But the result of the algorithms has to match what's in the test suite.
Yeah, that's what we're
doing. Yeah.
Okay. Any other comments on that before we move on?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what we currently do. So I also asked him about what he... I mean, I told him that that's because of the other languages, and asked him if he nevertheless would like to see a separate definition or something.
Yeah, I don't know if we want to put in all the work. It's quite a bit of work to specify a synchronous, you know, an entirely different synchronous API.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it really buys us.
No.
Because I think the people in Ruby are going to end up implementing it differently from the people in Python and PHP and Perl.
Yeah.
I think let's just do a JavaScript API and say this is an asynchronous JavaScript API, and then just people can look at that if they want some kind of direction on doing one in Python or Ruby or another language like that. Okay. Anything else on that before we move on to the next thing?
Do we need to just rephrase the note somehow to make it more clear that it's only if you don't implement this API, but you want to follow the gist of it, that you can use the advice in the note we have about the synchronous variant?
I think we should definitely clarify the language much more than it already, much more than what we have in there right now. But I think specifically we should not specify a synchronous API in that document, and we should not say that API is the only way to implement the algorithms. You can implement the algorithms however you want to. It's just make sure that the output from those algorithms matches the test suite.
Yeah.
Okay. Next comment was, we list things like error constants for invalid syntax, but they do not appear to be defined anywhere. He's guessing we probably want an enum somewhere for those, and then don't make them all uppercase. Invalid space syntax is nice and simple. So that's true. We never got around to listing out the error constants. It's something that's been hanging out there that needs to be done, so we should make that change. Next comment, error cases should be linked to specific algorithm steps that will cause them to be raised. That's also a very good comment. I think we should do that. Should it really be an error if the compaction would lose some information? As a developer, I would much rather the algorithm compact as much as possible, but no further, so I wouldn't lose information, but I would also wouldn't get an error. The result might be less compact, but in my opinion, more useful. I'm pretty sure we're doing that, so we just didn't communicate that to him properly.
We lose information for terms that are not defined.
Right, and we don't, like...
No, we don't raise an error.
Right.
No, but...
But we do lose information.
His question is, should it really be an error if the compaction would lose some information? And we're saying, no, it shouldn't.
I think the reason why he reported that is that we still have an error constant, which is compaction. And the definition is the compaction would lead to loss of information. we never used it, but it's still in the spec. So I think that's the reason for that feedback.
I'm sorry, say that again, Marcus.
So we have a we have to find a constant which is called lossy compaction, and the definition of that thing is the compaction would be lead to a loss of information, and that's probably what triggered the feedback.
Okay, so we probably
just remove that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Next comment, you might want to be clear about what you mean by copying the input. Make sure implementers don't modify the structure in place. Yeah, so I think that well, it depends on the algorithm, and actually it also really depends on the implementer. So some people might implement it where they modify the data structure in place. That's how the algorithms were originally written. But that's probably a mistake to do that. We should probably be modifying a copy of the provided input.
Yeah.
Okay. WebIDL does not have, next comment, WebIDL does not have string and number. Use DOM string in one of the numeric types for that. I'm guessing double. DOM string is correct. For number, I don't think it's double that we want. I think we'll have to look into that. It's whatever that matches the you know, JSON number variant. I don't know what it is, but no interface object callback is gone. You should use WebIDL callback construct instead. He said he really likes the node style callbacks, so we need to switch to the WebIDL callback construct. Which is fine. He says, I think 2RDF is probably designed wrong. Why are you sending one callback per quad when it'd be simpler to call back with an array of quads? Either way, if there's a good reason to have multiple callbacks, then you also need a way to signal that all the data has been processed. Otherwise, I can never know how many to expect and do whatever work I need to do next. Which is a fantastic point. I think the reason that we have one callback per quad is we wanted to provide a way for them to, I guess, halt processing at some point, or provide like a count on, you know, basically provide feedback on how many triples have been generated. I'm afraid that if we call back with an array of quads, that could be a lot of data. But that said, we're having to keep the entire JSON object in memory, so the amount of data that it would create would be no more than the amount of data that's already in memory. The memory usage could be twice as, you know, one to two times as much as the JSON document that we have. Or probably more than that. So does anyone have a feeling on whether or not they want one callback per quad or just one callback at the end of processing? And if we want one callback per quad, we need to have a method that's called when the data's complete, when it's finally processed.
I think it's much easier to pass all the quads in at once.
I agree.
I think so too. Is there any way to specify in WebIDL that it's an iterable of any kind? I don't think so.
I don't think there is. We can just change the signature to just return back an array of quads and be done with it.
Yeah, if there is no iterable, then that should be fine.
Proposal, the callback for the 2RDF method should accept quad, an array of quads, callback signature for the toArray method should accept quad. That is compact. Let's see. That is callback is called once after all processing has been completed. Thanks, Greg. See you later.
All right.
And I guess we do have quite a bit more on here. Do we want to continue to go through it, or should we just end the call for today? We probably should end the call because this will probably take at least 30 or 40 more minutes.
Maybe just a quick question. Do you know what's the current status of that error handler work that Dave is working on?
No, not started on it. He's busy with the Paceworm commercial launch, so he's probably not going to be able to get to it for the rest of the year. We could just remove the error handler stuff. I think I'm kind of the holdout on that, meaning that I really wanted there to be a way for you to tell the processor to halt processing or continue. So maybe we should simplify that. Is that, Marcus, is that kind of what you're asking?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, so let's simplify it and see what it
looks like.
Okay, so let's simplify it and see what it looks like after we do that.
Okay.
And we can figure out some other way to do the process, the fix up of the, or basically fixing up the data. We can figure out some way to do that in the future if it really becomes necessary. But honestly, I think what people are going to do is they're going to fix up the data before they pass it off to the algorithm. Probably going to be the way that they handle that, and it's not going to be through the JSON-LD API. So let's remove that, simplify it, and be done with that. Any other questions on the comments Robin has sent in? All right. Thanks for the great conversation today, guys. And we'll chat again next week.
Thanks.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
See you. Bye.